The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you on this very, very somber day in Israel and, of course, for many of us around the world.
Indeed, it is a somber day, and you can certainly feel that wherever you go. TV stations are not broadcasting their usual program already since last night. Radio stations have very, very somber music indeed. It's very, very difficult to miss the fact that today is the Memorial Day to our fallen soldiers. Just some of the facts that present themselves today on Yom HaZikaron in 2022. So considering the fact that we had what would usually be considered as a relatively quiet year since the last time we paid respect to our fallen soldiers and to victims of terror, we've unfortunately had to add quite a number of names to the list. So this is in what's considered to be a relatively calm year. 56 new names of IDF and security personnel have been added to the list of those fallen in the past year, and a further 84 IDF veterans who were injured during their service and who sustained injuries that ultimately have led to their death also passed away during the course of the past year. Let's not forget that only since March, 15 Israelis have also been killed by acts of terror. So this is an ongoing situation. We count our numbers since 1860, which was the date upon which it is considered, the Yeshuv is considered to have been established in the land of Israel. And since that time, we have more than 24,000 soldiers, police officers, prison wardens, Shin Bet and Mossad agents who have been killed in the course of their action. And a further something like 4,000 civilians, I see the number that was quoted by the National Insurance Institute. They've said 3,199 civilians killed in hostility since the establishment of the state. So when we try to put those numbers into perspective, I know that for some people, 24,000 over 160 years might not sound like a great deal. And when you think about Russian casualties just over the period of the past few months in their campaign in Ukraine, according to unofficial numbers, Russian military casualties run into something like half that number. Something like 12,000 soldiers apparently have been killed just from the Russian army over the past few months. Put that into the context of Israel over 160 years and double it up to 24,000. For some people, it doesn't sound like a huge price has been paid. But what I can say to you is that there is no man, woman, or child in Israel who has not been affected in some way by a loss that has been sustained during the period of the recent period or during previous periods longer ago. We're going back to the War of Independence and the Six-Day War, and of course the Yom Kippur War, which had many casualties. There is not a man, woman, or child in this country who is not affected in some way by a loss that has been sustained in the family or amongst their group of friends or amongst their colleagues serving in the army. Nobody can say that they have not been affected by the requirement that we have to defend ourselves, to defend our nation, and of course to defend our land. And so therefore, it really affects every man, woman, and child. Everybody certainly has a feeling that there is a certain loss that we have to commemorate today. The day began yesterday already with some pre-events, but ultimately the national moment that we all stood together came at 8 o'clock yesterday evening. The central ceremony was held at the Kotel in the presence of the President of Israel, President Buzi Herzog, and in the presence of the Chief of General Staff, Aviv Kochavi. They both addressed the grieving families who were represented at the Kotel, at that ceremony at the Kotel. We were very fortunate to be able to go back to in-person ceremonies this time around, because for the last few years, of course, we've not been able to do that. A lot of the focus was on that siren that sounded for a minute at 8 o'clock, when we all stood silent across the country and we just took a moment to think about the massive sacrifice that has been made by men, women, and children in Israel in order to defend our land. And let's not forget that we still have a conscript army, which means that every young person is expected to go and play their role, do their service, protect the land, protect the people, in order to ensure that we have our state. And of course, it was Prime Minister Naftali Bennett who said last week during the Yom HaShoah ceremonies that the only people that we can rely upon to protect us and to give us our freedom is ourselves. And in order to rely upon ourselves, we all have to be willing to go out and to defend our land, to defend our people, and unfortunately, ultimately, in some cases, to pay the maximum price for doing that. And it amazes me to what extent the Israeli youth of today are absolutely willing to go out.
I was going to ask you that. I find that exactly, that the fact that, and as Rene points out, there's, what, for 15 million Jews in the world, that means these numbers are significant. And as you say, everybody knows somebody who's either been lost through terror or in war or somehow in the defense of the country. And yet there's no resistance to becoming part of the army. In fact, it's the opposite. It's so much part of a culture there that this is part of what it means to live in the country and to be Israeli. It's as simple as that. It's actually phenomenal if you look at it from one step away.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it always amazes me to what extent our young people are willing, not only willing, they're filled with energy about the prospect of going out and playing their role and doing their service and protecting the country, contributing in some way. And, you know, I saw it through my household as well, being an Olé as I have been. And of course, I'm in good company because so many Israelis are Olim, and many of them, like me, bring young children to this country, knowing full well that at some point we're going to have to send our children to the army, and we're going to have to run the risk of potentially losing those children as a result of the service that they do. And I remember in the moment when I could see my children approaching their army age, and the extent to which people from outside of Israel couldn't quite understand this. Why are you so willing just to sit there and allow your children to be exposed to this danger? My answer was a very simple one. I said, we've lived in this land and we've been protected as Jews around the world for so many years. While our children were growing up, while we couldn't play our role, other people sent their children. They did their job. They paid that sacrifice. They all did their role. And now it is my turn and it is our turn. And every time your turn comes around, there is no choice but to stand up and say, Hineni, to say, I will do what I need to do in order not only to repay those that who have gone before me, but in order to secure the future. Because that's really what this is about. If we don't, each and every one of us, stand up and say, we will play our role, who will do it in our stead? There is nobody else to do it. And so back to the Prime Minister's words from last week, we are the only ones who can rely upon ourselves. And we have the great fortune to have an amazing army, to have an army that not only has military strength and has technology and has the fear of the world about what we might be able to achieve, the fear and the admiration of the world, but also an army that has a heart, an army that has values about how to treat other people. When we are holding that weapon and they are helpless, how do we treat them? How do we deal with those helpless people who we come up against? Are we evil, and do we use our power, or do we use our heart instead and say, to evaluate every situation as it should be in order to treat people in the way that we would like them to treat us if the tables were turned? And that also goes to the way in which we treat our soldiers, those who are not quite as fortunate, some disabled soldiers, some soldiers who don't quite have the same physical capabilities that we do, others who want to play their role and yet don't quite have the same ability. The army has a job for everybody. Even I've seen proud, uniformed, Down syndrome soldiers who are so proud to be part of the IDF in their uniform. The IDF takes care of them. They give them jobs to do. They make sure that they have all the facilities that they need. They make sure that they're returned home in the evening if that's what they need to be done in order to allow them to play their role. So there is a heart involved in all of this, as well as that military might and that military strength. And I think we have an immense amount to be proud of today as we stand in admiration and, of course, with that very, very heavy feeling about the losses that have been sustained over the years.
Yeah, it's Anthony, when your children were becoming, were reaching that age, what was the feeling that you had around this? You had made a choice to go and live in Israel. Obviously, you do this every single day of your life. It's a commitment to the country, educating people around Israel. It's without knowing, needing to know more, it's very, very clear about your commitment to the country. But as a parent, was it a difficult time for you? Was it a difficult acknowledgement of the reality of what could have been?
Absolutely. There was an immense amount of trepidation. I mean, obviously, when approaching something that is an unknown, bearing in mind that I never went through the system. So for parents who went through the system, they at least have a certain knowledge about what they're sending their children to do. They also have a knowledge about how to pull the strings in order to get what they really want. They also have contacts within the military arena if they've been through that, friends, colleagues, people that they can call upon to advise, to help, to do favors. We as Olim were not in that situation. We were not able to call upon people that we knew, things that we knew, in order to assist our children to make their way through the system. So I suggest that for Olim children, there is a certain potential disadvantage in going into something without any possible way of somehow influencing or manipulating or creating a pathway that will potentially make it easier or potentially make the fit a little better as they go to the army. So for me, there was a great deal of trepidation as we approached those times. I'm very fortunate to have seen my children do their military service and serve in Miluim and go through conflicts in a safe way. They've been secure. They've had their difficulties along the way, but ultimately I think they've come out bigger, better, and stronger people who have learned an immense amount from the time that they were in the military. And as I say, I'm quite fortunate and my family are quite fortunate to have been through that experience, because I think it's added a great deal to what who my children are today. Not everybody has the same experience, and I acknowledge that the IDF is a big place and there is a lot that goes on, and not all of it is necessarily good. There are people who come out with a very, very mixed or even a negative view about some of the things that went on, and there is no doubt that that will always be the case. This is a big place with many, many people, not all of whom necessarily subscribe to the philosophy that they try to send from the top down, which is, let's be strong, let's be determined, let's defend our country, but also let's have a heart, let's look after people, let's defend the people who are coming to help us, because that's really what it's all about. Right. And so as we move through today, in about 2 hours from now, we will have the 2-minute siren that will sound. I call upon everybody to join that particular 2 minutes of silence, to think about those who have lost their lives, those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice on our behalf, because we are the grateful beneficiaries of the amazing work that they've done over the years, some of whom remain unnamed. There was a slip yesterday or the day before when the minister divulged some details about an operation that took place 40 years ago. Wow. And which was still under military censorship. It was such a sensitive operation about a soldier under his command who was lost, and he mentioned that it was a slip. But so a lot of this we don't even know about, but we still have a great deal of admiration and respect for all that went before us. We will stand for 2 minutes in 2 hours from now, and of course then the day will be taken up with local ceremonies at local military cemeteries where people will go to pay the respect to those who are buried there. And as the day rolls on, we're going to go to the happy part as sun sets, and we, of course, celebrate 74 years, amazing 74 years Incredible. Of independence of the State of Israel.
And that is a conversation that I look forward to having with you. Tomorrow we're going to look at some of the numbers, some of the stats, as we love to do on this day, what it means to celebrate 74 years of independence. That's coming up tomorrow. In the meantime, Anthony Reich, thank you as always for bringing a very, very real and relatable report to help us to understand, from sitting quite far away, what it means to commemorate Yom HaZikaron. It's 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.